Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Generations of American schoolchildren grew up taking the President's Physical Fitness Test. The time test of running, sit-ups, push-ups, and more either reinforced your love or hatred of gym class, and perhaps even shaped lifelong attitudes toward exercise. The test ended in 2012. It was replaced with a program that was designed to place more emphasis on overall health as opposed to athleticism. However, to make American schoolchildren healthier, the Trump administration has plans to revive the older version of the test.
Order that I'll sign today in a few moments directs the council to develop strategies to improve America's physical fitness and renew the American spirit, excellence, competitiveness, and sportsmanship. To that end, I'm pleased to announce that we're officially restoring the Presidential Fitness Test and the Presidential Fitness Award, and it's going to be a very big thing.
Joining us now to talk about the origins of the Presidential Fitness Test is Vin Scareri, reporter and web editor for Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Welcome to All Sides, Vince.
Well, thanks for having me.
So much like today's concerns about childhood obesity and children not getting enough exercise, didn't the President Physical Fitness Test, when it originated, it grew out of similar concerns? Is that right?
Yeah, that's safe to say. Only it wasn't necessarily children. Actually, there was an astonishing number of things that grew out of this idea that we did not have the most physically fit people to be inducted into the military. So this was, you know, one of the things. Obviously, the program has its origins in the Cold War, and that was always a concern of, you know, proper nutrition and physical fitness for soldiers. And honestly, that led to that was one of the driving forces behind the creation of artificial turf as well. They were looking for some place for people to be able to exercise in urban settings. But there was a study that was done in youths, and it was not Americans did not do as well on it as people in Europe, and that kind of led to some concerns, and that led to some federal concerns, because this was, you know, not only a health issue, but honestly, it was a national security issue.
Now, Dwight Eisenhower was the first president connected to the test. So how did he become involved with the program?
Well, he was actually given this this report done by these doctors. And he was the one who said this is kind of an issue. And he signed an executive order for the President's Council on Youth Fitness. And that was actually Richard Nixon was a vice president at the time, and he was the chairman of that council, and they developed a series of tests to be done to administer to area youth, you know, a shuttle run, a lengthier run, pull-ups, long jump, sit-ups. And what I thought was really interesting is initially it included a softball throw. And that was a reference to the idea that, you know, it was the same basic skill set as tossing hand grenades.
Oh, okay. Yeah, got to make sure you can toss the hand grenade far enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after Eisenhower, JFK Jr. seemed like the ideal president to endorse fitness. He appeared youthful via photos of the Kennedys gallivanting around Cape Cod. So what was his involvement like, and how did JFK change the test?
Well, first, I'm glad that you said he appeared youthful, because he was actually very ill for most of his life. I mean, he might be the only president who was too ill to join the service, and his father pulled strings to get him into combat. But he actually did, you know, he wrote a piece for Sports Illustrated In December of 1960, it was before he took office as president, and again it outlined the national security concerns with having these kind of shortcomings, and he also formed a council that would create standards and encourage further physical participation. And obviously he did so himself. I mean, you know, there's a very popular image of, you know, touch football on the White House lawn and you know, hikes and things like that. You know, he was a very young, very apparently very active president. And after his assassination, that continued on with the Johnson administration.
Yeah, so the Johnson administration took up the banner of the physical fitness test after the Kennedy assassination. So what changes to the fitness test were made under the Johnson administration?
Well, they did another fitness survey in 1965. And that was, they had seen some improvement based on, you know, what they had seen a decade earlier. And that was the point where they started to implement the Presidential Physical Fitness Award. And some students get, you know, got those little certificates or sometimes a little pin for scoring high enough in the physical fitness tests. And that was kind of the one that we knew for generations before it started to get phased out in the 21st century.
So generations of school children took this test, and they did it in school. And some have good memories, some have bad memories. Why? And I guess the bad memories probably stick out more. Why did this test become so traumatizing for some people?
Well, I think part of it is that, you know, school in general can be traumatizing. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, it's very easy to slide into a bad experience that will haunt you. But at the same time, I mean, you know, there's a certain element of physical activity that even people who might be good at it might not be good at. I mean, you know, I don't know about you, but I can remember tripping over my own feet for many years throughout school.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was one of those things that just kind of spawned all kinds of anxiety.
Yeah, I could do the shuttle run, and I was really good at the sit and reach, but anything that involved hanging from a bar or climbing a rope or anything like that was not my cup of tea. So, and also, there were different ways the test was administered, because sometimes your whole class was sitting there watching you do it, and sometimes it was done in a rotation style. I guess that just depended on the school. I don't know if that came down from the way, if there were like rules to how to administer the president's physical fitness test.
I believe the rules were just that it had to be administered and not necessarily how it was administered.
Mm-hmm. And over time, some of the activities in the test were modified. Do you know some of the changes that were made or some of the things that were changed about it over the years?
Yeah, in the 70s, they did away with the softball throw with the idea that was a test of skill and not necessarily fitness. You know, sometimes the sit-ups were straight legged, and sometimes they were flexed leg sit-ups, and you know, the distances of the runs were changed as well. So I mean, it's one of those things that it kind of changed around the margins, but it was basically the same for a couple generations.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the origins of the president's physical fitness test with Vince Guerrieri, reporter and web editor for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. In 2012, the Obama administration replaced the president's physical fitness test with the Presidential Youth Fitness Program. So how did this program differ from what everyone was used to for decades?
Well, there isn't the most obvious change is there wasn't this element of competition that there had been on the physical fitness test. You know, how many sit-ups can you do in a minute? How long does it take you to run 500 yards? You know, things like that. You know, it was definitely a more holistic approach to being healthy. And it was, you know, this was around the same time that Michelle Obama started talking about the idea of healthier eating, which was also, you know, kind of met with some resistance in certain quarters. But you know, there was this idea that, you know, you want to be fit and healthy and not necessarily how much you can, how far you can run or how many push-ups you can do or things like that.
One consistent thing with each generation regarding these tests is, you mentioned this earlier, the poor physical condition of American children. So in the 50s, this test, you know, was started because they weren't performing as well as European children. But then today, everyone lives a more sedentary lifestyle, you know, with you know, all over the world, we all have electronics. So do you think the bringing the test back today, do you think it has to do with comparing us to Europe, or it has more to do with the electronics and the sedentary lifestyle?
Well, it's honestly, that was one of the things that Kennedy said in the Sports Illustrated story in 1960, is he talked at length about this idea that, you know, we lead a more comfortable, more automated life than we did, you know, 50 years ago. So there really is nothing new under the sun. But I do believe that this is, you know, one of those instances where it is a health concern for a variety of reasons, because, you know, we don't go out and do things as much anymore, that we might, you know, stay home in general. And honestly, and this is nothing but my own speculation, I think that this is, you know, one of the consequences from when the plague hit in 2020, the idea that, you know, all of a sudden we were spending more time at home by ourselves, and, you know, what were we doing to kind of get out and move around?
The revival of the presidential fitness test coming right now. Do you know if the Trump administration, you know, is doing a study, the same way? Because you said we didn't score well back in the day whenever this was first started. You know, Americans didn't score well as children in Europe on the test. I want do is there any study on how Americans would score today versus other countries?
That is a question that I cannot readily answer.
Whenever you heard that the Trump administration was thinking about bringing back the president's physical fitness test, what was your immediate reaction? It was to write a piece about it, I guess.
Well, I actually this piece kind of predated that. It was one of those things that I had just gotten thrown to write about last year, but it was kind of rather fortuitous given everything that's going on now. It was just, you know, it was kind of interesting. I don't know if you watch John Oliver, but he actually talked at length about this idea of making America healthy again. And there are obviously legitimate concerns, but some of it appears to be penny wise and pound foolish. I mean, I'm not sure how precisely this test would be administered. Quite honestly, I don't feel like life is easier for teachers and school administrators today than it was even 20 years ago. So the devil will be in the details.
Yeah, and I guess there's a lot of details that need to come out about what President Trump administration means about reviving the president's fitness test. Will it include all of the things that it included in the past? What do you think that there's a chance of a whole new generation being traumatized by the president's physical fitness test coming up soon?
I feel like part of any kind of education is trauma. So, I mean, it's just a question of how it's going to happen. Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible that there will be some people who, if there is a new test or if it's a revival of the standard test, will take well to it. And I feel like there are going to be some people who are indifferent to it. And I feel like there are people who may end up describing it to a therapist years later.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time and thank you for telling us the history of this. We've been speaking with Vince Guerreri, reporter and web editor for the Elyria Chronicle Telegram. Vince, thank you for joining us on All Sides today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk about possible revisions to the president's physical fitness tests, what experts would like to see if it comes back. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The these days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Feeling that American children were soft compared to their European counterparts led to the creation of the president's physical fitness test. The test involved running, push-ups, and more. And the test was eliminated in 2012 in favor of a program that was designed to place more emphasis on overall health as opposed to athleticism. Advocates in favor of the return of the presidential physical fitness test say it needs revisions. Joining us now is Casey Soleri Williams. She is the past president of the American School Health Association and a professor at Purdue University. Welcome to All Sides, Casey.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
So although it hasn't been given since 2012, what did you think of the president's fitness test?
It was pretty direct to the point of the original inception, right back in the 50s when I created it to increase competition, increase the ways to track and measure what, you know, certain folks could do. And then unfortunately, as a byproduct, assess what people couldn't do. And, the cream of the crop was who was kind of, it was looking for, see who's fit. I know the overall presentation was, let's get the youth of America ready for military life or be able to participate and engage in competitive sports. But, you know, everybody knows our reality. That's not for everyone. And so we pretty much highlighted that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Some people were very good at it and took it very seriously. And some people hated it. Was that your understanding too?
Very much. And I mean, I'll tell them myself, I was one of those people that got the award, right? So it's not like I didn't experience the benefit of the joy of seeing my certificate and all those different things like that. But it also, even as a young person, before I was a physical education professional, I could see the difference in my peers and how, you know, we were set apart. Then as a professional, it was, you know, definitely obvious when we already knew the kids that were in our classes that were going to excel and the ones who might struggle or, you know, really just be feel defeated when they didn't achieve what they were setting out to achieve.
The presidential youth fitness program replaced the presidential fitness test, and it was designed to place more emphasis on overall health as opposed to athleticism. Do you think it achieved its goal?
Not necessarily. That was the intent. You are correct. We are still seeing the uptick of overweight and obesity in young people because it's just one part of a large kind of formula that's really not complicated, but it's been made a little complex by nature of just daily habits and routines and norms of our culture. So unfortunately, no, I don't think it did achieve. It highlighted so many things of just lifelong fitness, lifelong advocating for that. But it's, you know, it's going up against a whole lot of resistance, just like I said, in our cultural norms of society and technology age that we're in, fast, quick, ready, air fry, you know, everything. It meant to do great things. It meant to do wonderful things. It just, it fell short because it's only one thing in a big mixture of the recipe, if you will, for success.
Now, before the president's fitness test returns, you say it needs some updates. So what would you like to see changed about the test?
Well, I really want, I hope that the council focuses on the differences in composition and skill level and ability in doing these things. And then what the human body needs at certain pinpoints in time, if it's going to go back to where it's all the way as young as 10 years old being, qualified to receive this award or wherever it is administered, if it is at the elementary levels, if they can opt in, or if it's just primarily at middle and high schools like it was before, then making age-appropriate recommendations, making sure that the movements that are being asked and the tasks that they're having to complete actually really fit what could assess a fit person, right? And really are accessible and attainable for the folks that are being assessed at a certain time. Thinking about geography and thinking about where people are located, time of year that's administered, the different budgets that schools may or may not have some of the equipment that's needed for it. So it's just the thing for the person, but also the thing for the community itself to be a factor in what they select as what items that will be measured, as well as what the metrics will be to consider it successful or achieving certain goals.
So maybe giving individual physical education teachers a little more say in how they administer it rather than it being a one-stop shop.
I think it's a fantastic way to sum up what I just said. That is, a former phys ed teacher, having a say in what equipment is necessary in my school community, making sure that there are certified people in the schools, being those folks having the say in what is used, what is done, and what is going to be more appropriate or accessible for the community that they're serving. And then back to the point of the body of the child at that age in which they're being assessed, there are certain things that are, the sit-ups used to be on there. Sit-ups are not the best measure of core strength and can be compromised if your form, if you're doing it for time, which is what the previous test was. And if it goes back to the time being the emphasis, you're rushing through and you're missing form often. And that's anything you'd recommend at any stage in the lifespan, that you want to focus on form versus fast.
Oh, so you're going to, if you go fast with sit-ups, you end up pulling your neck out, right?
Exact neck, yeah. Hurting your back, damaging your back, straining, all kinds of things. Yes, all kinds of things, unfortunately, could have possibly happened. You might even hit your head on the ground from going backwards too quickly.
Yeah. So now you make me feel like they're going to change the sit-ups to planks, though. That's because that's the new hip thing.
Well, and that is actually a better assessment. No, don't be mad at me. That is actually a better assessment of core strength. But then even with the planks, because just like when push-ups were on there too. And so those are brought back. The top of a push-up is a plank, right? And so if you're holding it or you're pushing up in the wrong form, you don't have the right form, you can still hurt yourself. You still, damage your wrist. Even though you're holding a plank and, just a stationary position, you have to breathe. You have to make sure you're not pushing back on your toes, over on your wrist, damaging your shoulders, holding your head the wrong direction or not properly aligned. There's all kinds of things. Having your hips up too high or too low, you could be hurting your back. You'd be more damaged and harm than good. Or if you're not really doing the same form and you're not really assessing that core strength because you're up more in what looks like a downward facing dog, you're not necessarily fully assessing core strength if your form is out of place. So that's it.
Now, some time ago, there was a move away from traditional PE class, gym class, to more of a focus on team sports or even activities like rock climbing. It was to make an interest in lifelong fitness rather than just PE class. Do you feel like that's still the case today?
It depends. It's one of those things that so many things are state driven. And so it's really as far as what's available and what's accepted and what's approved and what budgets are prioritized. So if they do having a rock climbing wall is expensive, right? Having access to certain things may not be available if you're in a more metropolitan area with lots of, concrete and buildings and fewer greener spaces. So it depends on where you are and it depends on what's available. But if folks are really assessing what the community has available to them, what's kind of the norm for the area, and being able to do things that, yes, if this student stays in this area or is going to an area where these outdoors things are more available, the seasonal parts are accessible, or if the team aspect is a cultural norm in that area, then great, facilitate that, foster that, right? Provide access to that. But again, it's having the informed people in the room helping to make those decisions that are also going to be priorities as well. I like the idea of lifelong activity. Anything you do, you should want to be able to do it as long as you're able to move in the way that's, most comfortable and fitting and helpful for you. But yeah, just doing things for the sake of time or for the sake of this particular thing, there can be some benefit to it. But do I want to just do sit-ups every day, all day for the rest of my life? Probably not.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the recommended updates to the presidential fitness test with Casey Solari Williams, a professor in Purdue University's Department of Public Health. Now, there's been the epidemic of childhood obesity over the past decades. unstructured outdoor physical activity has been replaced with a lot of time spent on electronic devices. In addition, of course, our dietary habits are not the healthiest in this country. Do you know if it's if that is considered when PE programs for children are designed? Do they take into consideration how much time they're spending on electronics at home?
I think that's kind of the intention, right? Is to get as many of us towards that and starting as young as possible towards that minimum 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity every single week, right? And so moderate to vigorous, you know, meaning it increases your heart rate above the norm, but doesn't go beyond your 50 to 70% range to overexert yourself, but to get you going, increase your cardiovascular endurance. So make your heart happy, the way we put it to a younger generation. Just make your heart happy, get your muscles strong, make sure you're able to, you know, breathe and stretch fully. And so that full component of fitness, right? All the components of fitness. But then there's also the formula of having your good nutrition, right? Whole foods that come from their primary source, right? And fewer box things. But unfortunately, we don't have a lot of things facilitating movement on a regular daily basis, unless it's, you know, it's something that's required in school or offered in school or after school, if that's available in your area. And then we do have a lot of sedentary things, right? A lot of sit and not be so fit. Your thumbs are going to town on things in front of televisions or other devices, electronic devices. And then you also have packaged and prepackaged foods that are convenient, right? And that's convenient and often cheaper, right, than some of the foods that can be a little bit better for a lot better for you. So we're dealing with a lot of things that we have to make some sometimes seemingly systemic level changes, but also just getting the information out to people in ways for them to make better life changes and choices for themselves.
How do we get children more interested in fitness? There's so much competition for their attention nowadays. The sedentary lifestyle is more and more prominent. So it is something like having a presidential fitness test a way to get children more interested in fitness?
I don't know that that's the only way. I think it's really, if it's something that's part of one thing, if it's something you do as a kind of a habit or a norm as a younger person, even if you kind of veer from that as you grow up and things start to compete for your time and or things that are, you know, maybe more fun in your mind than going and moving around and exercising or doing some other kind of physical activity, you still want to get back to that, because as advanced as we may be with technology, as many gadgets and things that make our lives sometimes more convenient and, you know, and helpful and even fun, we still are humans that require certain basic things. And movement is one of those basic things. The body requires movement. Movement is life. It's one of the things that an adage that I say on a regular basis. As technologically savvy as our world is, there's some basic things we need as humans, and movement is a primary one of those things. And I ask you, if you've been sitting a long time and the minute you get up, don't you feel a difference in your body? So you don't even have to be an expert to know that your body needs to move around.
We've done previous shows on youth sports, and we've talked about children being focused on just one sport or getting into a travel team. Now, I'm sure that that's great to play a sport multiple days a week is really great for their fitness. But do you have any concerns about children diving into one specific sport at a young age and specializing?
Absolutely. There is something to be said about being engaged there in team sports. It builds so many other things in addition to your physical fitness levels. So there's wonderful attributes and bonuses and benefits for that. But the unfortunate downside is if you primarily focus on one thing, you can get what's called overuse injuries from just training and overstressing certain parts of your bodies and those routine movements over and over and over again. And you're not building up this whole well-fit person, particularly when you're such a young person. We see that younger and younger ages that they're getting involved in single sports and really competitive and traveling. And so they're not getting rest that they need. They're not being able to recover in the way that they need to. They're not training in a way that's just, you know, unless those folks that they're training with understand the concept of cross training and doing more than just the things that are performed for the competitive part. Because that's where you see an increase in injuries, decrease in developmental phases, stunting of growth when there's overuse of some of those bounding things, those athletic events that have a lot of bounding and harsh movements that are, you know, hard on the joints and muscles. So having an overall just fitness life and movement life. It doesn't even have to be where you see it as fitness. It doesn't have to necessarily be weightlifting and exercise in that way, but just movement. You mentioned earlier about getting out and playing, just being outside and just playing in the, you know, sand or the grass or the forest or the hills or the street in a safe space where the vehicles aren't coming, you know, and you're able to just enjoy yourselves outside, getting your heart pumping, getting your muscles moving, stretching and breathing, and just enjoying being around other people.
Getting back to the idea of the presidential fitness test returning, we don't know the details, but if you were consulting and helping to design it, what would you want to make sure it includes?
Well, you're not going to like this, Amy, but the plank is going to be one of them.
Okay.
The plank would be in there. I really, not getting really too deep into the weeds of the specific movement, but I would really emphasize the total body and not just certain things. It's just like you can't say and measure a person's overall health by just saying their BMI level is in the appropriate range. There's so many other parts to it for a human health. And so thinking about things that measure cardiovascular endurance, not just for speed, but just for how are you performing. I would like to see the test measure over time and be a continuous thing and not just a one time and a spot opportunistic glance at a person's performance for that day. Because think about all the things that a child could come to school with that day that could change the way that they perform. I would like to see it be a continuous measure, whatever the measures are of those different components of fitness that are done. And if there's equipment that's required, like the sit and reach was one of the things from the previous original test, that required a box to measure you. Well, if a school doesn't have the budget for that, then if there's going to be this requirement that these things are done, and then providing all of the equipment that schools need for those that don't have the budget and may not even, you know, be able to allocate for that, have that be provided. So more than just the movement, also the process and the parts that go to it to be considered.
We've been speaking with Casey Solari Williams, a professor in the Purdue University Department of Public Health. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tammy.
And coming up, we're going to talk to the Ohio Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance about what these fitness tests should look like in schools. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Generations of Americans have a love-hate memory with high school gym class, especially when it came to taking the president's physical fitness test. The tests of running, push-ups, and sit-ups were a breeze for athletic students and torture for those who may not have been as competitive. With plans underway to bring back the president's test, we're taking a closer look at youth fitness. And we're now going to look at school fitness tests here in Ohio. Joining us now is Mary Levine, president of the Ohio Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. Welcome to All Sides, Mary.
Oh, thank you for welcoming me, Amy.
So what fitness tests are currently offered to Ohio school children? Are there any that are actually required right now?
Yes, because in the state of Ohio, we have our Ohio State physical education assessments that follow along with our Ohio physical education standards. And so currently students are tested using the FitnessGram, which is a more holistic approach to physical fitness testing.
Yes, I've heard of this FitnessGram. Can you explain it to us? What is a FitnessGram?
So the FitnessGram was developed by Dr. Kenneth Cooper. And the FitnessGram is a battery of fitness tests that measure a student's the five components of fitness except in the state of Ohio, we do have the ability for districts to opt out of the BMI testing, but it does test their cardiovascular endurance, their muscular endurance, their muscular strength, as well as their flexibility.
And so these are tests that PE teachers have to give to what ages? Are we talking K through 12 or certain ages?
No, it's K through 12 currently, because it isn't, it's standard three, which is physical fitness testing and physical activity, where once we run them through some of the testing, or even prior to going through some of the testing, we do stress the need for them to think about how to be physically active outside of physical education.
Mm-hmm. I have a middle schooler and an elementary school student, but and they both have talked about, they've told me about a PACER test. Is that a part of this fitness gram, taking the PACER
test?
Yes,
the PACER test. Yes, it is the PACER test, which is a test where they run on a beat. So it will give a beep, and then they run to a, you know, it's a certain distance, and then they get there before the beep, and then they run back. And so it's very measured. And as, of course, as the test goes on and you are showing that you're getting better and better, the beeps do come a little bit faster.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I can remember my kids coming home one year and saying, I don't remember how they phrased it. I beat the beeps this year, or I did better than last year, that kind of thing. But it sounded like they had some fun, not like memories of the presidential physical fitness test that maybe was not fun for some.
Right. Well, the whole idea behind the fitness gram is it's a whole growth model. So it isn't one shot, you're done. It is supposed to be where they keep track from year to year, and they can then improve on their own fitness by, here's some ways that you might do this, which is what a physical education teacher will do with them. So maybe, you know, you made 25 beeps this year, and now here's things you can do. Here's stuff that we do in class when we have class. And so here's some of the things you can do outside when you're at home, when you're out with your friends playing, or when you're on your sport team. So there is that growth component to it.
Okay. And so what are some other tests besides, so the PACER test is kind of running. What's another one? Can you give me another example?
They do have the sit up and push up, and then there is the sit and reach.
Okay. With the same box that I would remember as a kid?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you feel like these tests, what is in the fitness gram and the ones you just described, are they the best way for a school to measure children's fitness?
Yes, that would be right currently. Mm-hmm. Okay. So currently that would be, a great option, because within their physical education curriculum, students are participating in various different activities, which will support their growth in physical fitness. So it isn't just teaching to this test. So for example, if I'm teaching let's say I'm working with ninth graders and I'm teaching a fitness unit, I will do planks, I will do step ups, I will do cycling. So there would be various different cardiovascular activities, jump rope, that they can do to help increase their cardiovascular endurance. And then when it came time for the test, there could be some improvement there. Mm-hmm. One of the things we battle in the state is not enough time in physical education, because our physical education time is increasingly getting smaller and smaller. So for testing in a school, it has to be a growth model, because there are times, like I'll take elementary, for example. Many of our districts used to see their elementary students three times a week. Then it got down to two times a week. Now we're almost pretty lucky to have it one time a week. And for the districts, there are certain districts where an elementary child might only have physical education one time in a 5-day to 10-day rotation. When you get to middle school, depending what a middle school looks like, it might be 5th through 8th grade, it might be 6th through 8th grade. So I'll just go on the 6th through 8th grade. You'll see, well, I might have physical education in my first semester in 6th grade, but I might not have physical education until my last semester in 8th grade. Mm-hmm. Well, there's an awful lot of time that's in between that where they're not getting a physical education class. Maybe I'm lucky and I had it in sixth grade and I had it in seventh grade, but I don't have it in eighth grade. And so that would be the middle school model. And then in high school, we have probably a greater portion of the high school students will waive out of physical education. So we don't generally get to see most of the high school population. Talking with many of my high school colleagues, they might see one third of the students in their building. And it's generally, it could be a 9-week period, it could be a semester. So when we talk about fitness and wanting students to be more physically fit, one of the things that our physical education teachers are striving for is giving the students tools and teaching them how to be more physically active so they can become more physically fit.
Do you feel that the president's physical fitness test, which was around for decades and then it was done away with in 2012 by the Obama administration, do you see merits in having something like the president's physical fitness test that had an award and that kind of thing? Or is this newer model where it's focus on health rather than athleticism? Is that the better way to go?
With the presidential, and I grew up with the presidential fitness when I first started teaching. That is the test that I had and I used with my students. And it is not a test that actually encourages a student to be more physically fit. If you fail at one of any of those components, so you're not in that 50 or 85 percentile, which what there used to be, you pretty much get this very, you know, and I had middle school. So the attitude right away was, well, I'm no good. I just stink. I'm just going to go away. I don't even like being physically active. So mentally, it really is very, it's just very demeaning toward them. And if you didn't get the patch or you didn't get the badge or you didn't get the certificate, their self-esteem really went down. What I did when I was teaching, because it was the only test we had, is I just made up my own physical fitness badges and certificates and made sure that I made it more of a growth model, which is why I think we all in the field of physical education and teacher preparation, we all welcome the fitness gram because it is a growth model where they should be able to carry on with other activities, because there is a component to fitness gram called activity gram, which is what are activities I do. Like maybe I help at home with chores. So I'm going up and down the basement stairs helping with the laundry. Well, that's a physical activity and I'm gaining something because I'm carrying a basket full of clothes up and down. There were things that we did with them to help them understand, maybe you mow the grass and I don't mean on a riding mower. Or maybe I walk the dog and I don't mean just out the door and back in. Or maybe I'm out in the playground playing with my friends. Here's some activities we can do. So I think when we look at physical fitness, we don't know what the current model is even going to look like, but the older model, I was very happy when the older model was no longer used because there were components of that that did not test any one of the components of fitness. So when you're looking at it from that kind of a standpoint, I want students to be more physically active. I want them to put their phones down, to put their game down. I want them to enjoy it and become a lifelong mover, because we do know that if they are lifelong movers, their health improves and we don't have as many health issues. But we also have to be mindful of the mental health issues that might come from a test that leaves their self-esteem low.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about school fitness tests here in Ohio with Mary Levine, president of the Ohio Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. When you heard that the Trump administration wanted to revive the presidential physical fitness test, what was your gut reaction? What'd you think?
I first thought, why aren't they asking the people that do this every day? We already have a physical fitness test, and we use it. And I would say that across the country, I know in Ohio, we use the fitness gram, that it would be nice if someone would say, hey, what are you using in schools? And then we could see this. Not knowing what this looks like, I'm thinking it should just have stayed at rest.
Yeah. So there's it's a part of this whole idea, this Make America Healthy, Make America Healthy Again movement that's going on, and bringing back the presidential physical fitness test is a part of that. Do you think that having an award with like the presidential seal on it, does that help some students? I would think that some kids who were really athletic were very proud to get this presidential seal. I mean, I know that most students or a larger majority probably didn't get it. But did you see some pride back in the day whenever you were giving out the president award?
I did. But I also saw some of, and I can honestly tell you, Amy, that I had athletes that could not pass all the components. Mm. Because again, some of the components, like, for example, I had gymnasts. And some of these gymnasts went on and they got college scholarships. So it's not like they were just a gymnast. And then once they graduated, they didn't continue. And they couldn't do some of the components because of their muscle mass, which a few of the tests, and one being the flexed arm hang, is kind of a useless test. It does not really test any kind of muscular strength. And so I could see their own self-esteem going down because they'd look and go, well, wait a minute, I'm pretty strong and I'm pretty fit. And yes, you are, but you didn't make, you know, that cut. So it could have some motivating aspects to it. It just really, we just don't know any of the details and we don't know the shape. I would like any kind of a physical fitness test, if that is going to be the route, to include some health components like sleep, like nutrition, because that really all plays into it. And I know when we are talking with our students in PE, we do talk about getting enough rest, putting your phone away, just going outside, even just take yourself for a walk to clear your mind. I mean, you know, there's different things that we do try to do with our students to help them it be more holistic and not just central focus to a sports skill.
Mm. Yeah, my next question was going to be, what recommendations would you give if they asked you to help redesign the presidential physical fitness test? So you just named a couple of them. I mean, what would you put in the test?
Well, I think there just needs to be some choice as far as what in the cardiovascular endurance do you want to assess? Can you want to assess someone doing the jump rope, cycling, running, because not everybody's a runner, but there are other ways that you can do an activity that is cardiovascular and it will test that. Muscular strength, you know, so there are some things that I think we can have some choice to and allow a student to grow. So maybe they're at, well, let's say a push-up, maybe they can do 5 push-ups and you're at one level, and the goal is set yourself a goal, a personal goal, to get to 10 push-ups. And then when you get there, set yourself a goal to get to the next. So I think there should be incentivized goals that a student would want to become physically fit.
I didn't realize you said earlier that there's less and less time for PE in the school day. How do you advocate for more time in the school day for PE? Because there's so many schools are being pulled in so many directions with so many priorities.
Well, it is. And if we want children, I mean, we have data, and trust me, my colleagues across the country, we have data that when a child is physically active, their brain really kicks in. And when their brain is ignited, they actually do better in any academic content area. So there's better reading scores, there are better math scores. And I understand that we do get torn away, but if we really want them to be, if we're really concerned about the health and well-being, and we want them to be healthier, we really have to be the ones that are seeing them, and it has to be a priority. Like right now, physical education, is not necessarily a priority in schools. You have administrators who don't always support their physical education curriculum. That child, well, yeah, they need extra reading time. Well, my philosophy is if I gave a teacher 45 minutes to teach reading and you were not very good at teaching reading in 45 minutes, giving you 90 is not going to make them read better. Mm-hmm. And so for me, if we are really want to invest in them, we have to teach them how to become more physically active. And it doesn't mean they have to be star athletes. All they have to do is get up and move. And I have gone from teaching in public school to teaching at a university. And one of the things that I have always noted at the university, you have 19, 20, 21, 22, 23-year-olds that come into a course and they'll say, well, I'd like to learn how to lift weights. And it's like, okay, did you ever do this? No, we never had that because, well, I really didn't have a lot of PE. And so right away, you know, my heart gets very sad.
I'm sorry. We have to leave it there, Mary. We're out of time. Our guest has been Mary Levine, president of the Ohio Association of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. Thank you for your time today, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you. This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.